together in response to something we had started, but I wanted to let everyone know that I really appreciate your coming. Megan is going to be the project manager on the ESTE's focus area study. And so we really appreciated the chance to get together with all of you. We I'm sure you've seen the announcement for the public information meeting, but we had had a conversation with Julie. Well, I guess we started this conversation upstairs back in May, about designing this process together and making sure that everyone was involved. So I saw your letter to Roger, and I'm not sure it accurately reflected what we had been talking about, because we had a lot of conversation about the purpose of this meeting, and that it was a chance for all of you to help us design the process, to let us hear from you, and that that was how we were going to put things together. So I just want to put that out there, that we have said that from the beginning. We're very committed to it. And if anybody has questions or concerns, please talk to us and let us know, because, you know, we're having conversations with individuals here and there, and sometimes all the information doesn't get, you know, out to everybody. So I just really appreciate your being here. We are talking to different stakeholders. We're really excited about doing this together. We are looking for a facilitator. We put our RFQ out and received responses. So things are starting to move along, and this is a very good chance to keep moving along.
Well, perhaps we could circle back on the point you made about Roger's letter, maybe at the end, talk about what your perceptions are about that.
Sorry.
Okay, Gretchen's going to lead us, and maybe we should
do introductions. Can we do some introductions? Yeah.
Let's start with that. Let's start with that.
I'm Sam McGill, and I live in Hidden Hills.
I'm Amy Ryan, and I'm a member of the Planning Board, and I'm here as a resource.
Alan Tom, I live on Caswell.
I'm Will Raymond. I live on Mount Bolas. I'm also one of the Board of Directors of OWASA.
I'm Sarah McEntee, and I live on Caswell.
I'm Julie McClintock, homeowner president of Coker Hills West.
I'm Watson Bowes and live in Huntington, Somerset area.
I'm Carmen Elliott. I live in Elton Hills.
John Morris, longtime Chapel Hill resident. I've lived all over town.
I'm Gretchen Stromer, longtime resident, and I live in Estes Hills.
I'm Sandy Turbyville, and I've lived in Chapel Hill for 8 years now, and I live in Somerset, Huntington.
I'm Erin Sweet Langston. I'm with Coker Hills, and I also serve in a leadership role at the Association of Coker Hills.
I'm Priscilla Murphy. I've lived for 20 years in the Somerset Huntington area.
Winston lived. I live in Caswell, and I've lived in Chapel Hill for 51 years.
Madeline Snavely. I live in Pinebrook, which is adjacent to Elkin Hills.
I'm Martha Petty. I live in Hidden Hills for Old Circle, and my husband and Buck, and I've been there 22 years since October.
I'm Pat Lowry, and I live on North Street in the Franklin Rosemary District.
I'm Mary Jane Durbin. I live in Shady.
Yay! Hi, I'm Megan Woolley. I live in Carborough.
Sorry!
That's cool.
But I've been with the town for 2 years, so I feel like I'm an ad hoc resident, I guess.
So Mary Jane, we really appreciate the comments that you made to start about wanting to work as with the community and with all the stakeholders, because that certainly was a theme of the meeting that a few of us had with you back in May. And we came around, I guess, at the council meeting on, I think, what was the 25th, and we talked some about the implementation chapter of the 2020 plan, and we wish to see it a little bit more fleshed out. I know that there was pressure at time and so forth. And out of that whole meeting, I think, came some direction from the council that talked about community planning, talked about community being involved with developing the process, not just the study itself. And it's in that spirit that we're here, because we really do want to work as a team. We think actually that we could be great resources to the staff to actually do some of the legwork that the staff might actually do. And we think that one of the things about the 2020 plan is that it was a vision plan. And it skipped what we would refer to as land use. And I make the distinction of land use isn't just creating a new zoning ordinance or classifying this, that, and that, something else. It's more than that in our mind. Those are some of the things that we have been concerned about. We've been concerned about, we're a little bit concerned about the meeting that's been called, not the fact that it's a public meeting, we're thrilled about that, but we think that it's jumped the gun about certain things that the group as a whole might define up front as part of the process. Geographic area, for example, of the study, those kinds of things.
That, I think, is one of the things that was very different in your interpretation and ours that I just would like to share right off the bat.
Fair enough.
We felt it was important to have a chance to share information with people who have not been involved or are unaware of things like the Carolina North Development Agreement. There was a gentleman who made a comment, I don't remember who it was, at the public hearing, who said he didn't think Weaver Dairy Road was a good example of a complete street, which said to me that there have been other conversations about complete streets that that gentleman was not aware of.
Agreed.
So it's a chance just to share information. And that was our intent.
Yeah, okay. And I think that we support that in general, and I think that's something that isn't necessarily the South MLK, Estes Airport, whatever we're going to call it, area. It's kind of, I would think, crosses the discussion about all the plans that the town will face, the first two that you're working on, and then future. But specifically about the call for the meeting, we really want to have an opportunity to discuss the, you know, as part of the process, you know, what the area will be, the size, the length of time, the kind of resources involved, that sort of stuff. And we want to make sure we're all on the same page. I guess it's really that sphere.
Have been defined.
It's all in that sphere because we really want to work together. It's not a negative. It's not a criticism. We really want to be part of it. It's all part of our future.
And I think the boundaries seem to create some concern. The only reason that we said the area that we provided definition is that, again, some people aren't as familiar with the process as y'all are, and you were such a good asset for us in this planning, but a lot of people aren't nearly as involved. Some people are new to the neighborhood, so we wanted to send out that general description so that people would know what area we're talking about, because we were afraid, actually, that people might not attend the meeting because they might not realize that this affects their neighborhood. This is part of where they live. So in no way have we defined the area. We didn't mean for that to cause so much concern, and we apologize about that.
I think what's gotten people a little alarmed is that in the 2020 process, we talked about MLK South as a future focus area. And then suddenly, without any public input that I could discern, it became the Estes Carter study. And then in this recent email that went out, it's the Estes Drive study. So I hope today we can get into that in more general terms. And one of our main objectives is to talk about how this study area would appear on a map, and would it really cover enough area to.
And I don't think we can answer that until we have a public meeting and we have input from people. So we have to start somewhere, and we've started with the boundaries that came out of our meeting in May.
So, Mary Jane, is it fair to say then that the meeting that's going to happen the 27th and the 28th or 29th, whatever those dates are, is a meeting for the plan? Or is it a meeting for the study?
I don't know what you mean.
Well,
your distinction is between.
So, part of what we're concerned about, I think, and we'd like to work together on, is the plan for the plan. What is this planning process going to be? What is going to be the outcome of it? And I don't want to, we've got other people who are going to talk a little bit about that, but just to put it forward saying, we think that portion of what would be actually implementation guidelines, you know, like what are we going to do, I think is part of what we're talking about this meeting coming up. And that's part of what we're so concerned about, making sure that that's in place, because if that's in place, if it's not in place, let's start with the negative. It's not always a positive thing to do, but let's start with the negative. If it's not in place, we're not sure that there will be a positive outcome to the plan with everyone, with it meeting, at least as best as could be done, everyone's expectations. That's where we're coming from. So I think I've talked a lot about where we are and what we're thinking, and there are other people here who'd like to talk about a development of a plan for our process and some of our thoughts about that. I think Erin's going to talk to that.
Well, and I just want to clarify, do you all view the August meetings as information sharing?
Yes.
Or this, and that's the information sharing, what would be after the information sharing meeting?
That's what we're here to talk about with you today. So our thinking was that the reason you were interested in this discussion and that we were interested in meeting with all of you was to help define together what a plan, what the process would be for developing a plan in this area, because we made a commitment at the public hearing that we would share that with the council and that they would have a chance to look at it too, and then we would embark upon this. The public information meeting at the end of August is so that we can put information out. We've had people asking for maps, for information about student housing, you know, Carolina North. So there's no reason for us to sit on all of that. And it also gives people a chance to start to look at those boundaries and say, yeah, I think this makes sense, or no, so that when we embark on the process, people have information.
Then Mary Jane, at the meeting though, given the work that we presume we're going to do some today and maybe over the next couple of weeks, would it be fair to say that including the plan and the process that we've put together as a suggestion would be something that would be presented at the meeting?
If it's ready. If we all feel like it is, why
okay.
not?
Could I ask a question? You said that the some of the info will be presenting maps and discussing boundaries. Where is that? Where are the maps coming from and where are the boundaries coming from?
Maps are the information that we have about where natural features are, roads, neighborhoods,
bus routes, greenways,
all that stuff that people always want.
And boundaries?
There is no defined boundary. I think one of the first things that when we get into a process, the group will want to do is define the edges of the study. So the conversations that we had with that group, this group earlier gave some ideas, you know, just north of Piney Mountain and down here and so forth. I think we would show a wider extent so that people can see that whole area and start to react to those suggestions.
Well, the good thing, I think, is you've reassured me that there's an intent to work together to plan the plan. So I think that maybe some of the email, and I haven't been involved in the process as long as some others at the table, but some of the language in the email was sort of alarming in that it just, to me, it said, you know, we're going to talk about a new use for Estes Drive, and I said, new, what's wrong with the existing? That, you know, that was my thought, and so it communicated a different message than what you're saying, which I think is encouraging to us. So I think that, you know, the biggest thing we want is to make sure we have a voice as the stakeholder, as the majority of residential stakeholders in the area to help guide that plan. And so, yay, that's good. So
it's been our attention all along.
And that when we have the plan, it seemed as though council called for input, approval, saying, yay, this plan looks good, everybody's happy, we can then move forward to implement it. Is that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you're using the words in one way, so just for the sake of clarity, the council adopted the 2020 plan. The guidance that we heard was work with the stakeholders in the area to develop the process to go through a visioning and planning exercise that results in some kind of zoning recommendation for the council. Is that all
not entirely? Not entirely.
So in reading over transcripts and just trying to get up to speed, it was my and others' understanding that they said work with community to develop it and bring it back to us, then move forward.
So the plan for the plan, in other words, the council made a distinction between the two, which is kind of what we grasped. That is a plan for the process and the process itself. So the plan for the process is all the stuff we're going to get into shortly, you know, the facilitation and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But the deliverable out of the plan is
something. We did hear the council say that they would have a chance to look at the process before we started.
Yes. Okay.
Right.
Let's talk about the deliverable. I think that there's confusion there. So I don't believe that we think, certainly me, I'll speak for myself, that the only deliverable out of this is a zoning recommendation. It includes a discussion and recommendation of land use in its entirety. We agree, rather than just calling it a ordinance, rezoning.
We just had this
conversation. And I guess the other thing that is part of zoning that we're going to we are concerned about is what some people call form zoning,
form-based.
Other people call a variety of different things, and I think we probably need to talk about some of that too as we go forward, whether that is an expected deliverable as a result of this completion of the activity, not just the completion of the process, right? I think that needs to be understood and agreed or whatever.
And I'm going to steal from a conversation Pat and I were having this morning with some others, but in planner land, 2020 is a vision and it's very broad. When you get down into the details of a smaller area, you can have whatever you want to call it. It's a small area plan, it's a focus study, it's a corridor study. They all get into a higher level of detail about what you want. Form, density, character, and all uses. And the zoning is a regulatory tool that makes this happen. So, and I know some of you are very well versed in this, so I don't mean to be pedantic, but this causes a lot of confusion. So when we say we're all the way through to zoning, we're responding to some of the problems that have happened in town where we've stopped at this level. So if you don't change the zoning to reflect what you actually want to happen, you end up with this conflict. So, you know, if you follow Charterwood, zoning says one thing, the small area plan says another, they don't really match. And so there's no predictability for the community, and there's no predictability for the landowner, and it causes angst.
Mary Jane, just so I can get this accurately, you are suggesting that we are going to proactively rezone that whatever we decide to entice developers to develop what we want.
No, you're twisting my words.
No, I'm just wanting to clarify.
I am suggesting that the community is best served when these three tools are in alignment. Mm-hmm. So whatever the vision and details are, and I don't assume that I know what that is, it is helpful to rezone. And that may be something very small. It may be changing some standards in the LUMO. It may be doing nothing at all. You may just say what's on the books is what we actually want. Or it may be using one of those new tools or some hybrid thereof.
I'm just to clarify in my mind, if the recommendation is that a new zone would be encouraging. Right. Is the recommendation part of this end product going to be to actually do the rezoning or just to recommend if a developer asks for it to go ahead and rezone?
That depends. I mean, it depends on what the outcome of the process is.
Well, and there's also been some discussion in town, too, of modifying the current way we approve projects,
right,
and with the whole SUP process and the rezoning.
It's in the zoning.
Right. And so is part of what you're talking about less moving to a system where there's less discretion in rezonings, where there's more, we put the zoning on the book.
And that's a better way of phrasing what I was trying to ask when it came to form-based zoning, et cetera.
So as we go through the process, the group has the options to say at each level, you know, this is the vision we agree with, this is what we want it to look like more specifically in this area. And then zoning can tell you how you get a project approved, you know, what you have to do. Is it the planning board? Is it the council? What is it? You can go all the way, if you use form-based code, you can go all the way into what the streetscape looks like, how tall the buildings are, what color brick they use, and where it goes. So what your setbacks are, what your public stuff is. And you can have a picture of it here, but if you also put it in your zoning, then you've got good cohesion and you're much more likely to get what you said you want.
So in some ways that last level is not zoning per se, but an approach to zoning, to say how will what zoning will be considered, what kind of zoning and where and so on and so forth.
And in my experience, when you begin on a process like this, you don't actually know, unless you've decided, by golly, we're going to do it this way, you don't actually know what the best tool is until you have these conversations. And then at the end you say, okay, if we want to achieve this, do we just change the LUMO? Do we adopt some kind of hybrid or form-based code? And with good assistance along the way, you know, you start to figure out how you want to implement.
The reason I asked this is that, in my recollection,
can we come back? Because I think you've raised a good question and we got a good response, but what I'd like to do, if Gretchen's okay, is go through the agenda and loop back on that point.
So just to wrap up and clarify, the intent of the August meeting is information sharing for those who may not be aware, as well as getting feedback on a draft process, or only information sharing?
If we have a draft process that we've looked at and council has looked at, we want to put it out there.
Okay. Yeah.
And if it's not ready, you would see the next step with the public as the discussion of the process?
Mm-hmm. I would think so.
Yeah, I would too.
Based on what we heard of the public.
Okay, next week, John was going to talk a little bit about develop data to guide good planning, some of the data and the likes, and this may dovetail directly into some of the information sharing that you've been discussing.
Okay, thank you. This future focus area planning is really critical to the town's future. Chapel Hill is a town that's moving toward build-out. You know, we're not there yet, but these future focus area development decisions we're talking about could be the biggest decisions that will shape the town's future in a really long way, because these are areas that have potential for change. So we really feel that we need to base this planning on very good data and analysis, and we've got a lot of that. You know, we need realistic population projections. The town itself has done excellent studies of retail space availability and need, and also commercial space and need. And, you know, what would be reasonable absorption rates for new space coming online, what the current vacancy rate is. And then another really important data item is the amount of development that's already approved but not yet built, you know, particularly commercial, office, and residential space. So we really need for the town staff to help the public digest and evaluate this information. And we think that as the future focus planning unfolds, we need to constantly talk about this data and refine it and work to understand it. Just to mention one particular type of space, there seems to be a current nationwide interest in and demand for a particular type of development opportunity, and this would be a sort of attractive urban area with nightlife, restaurants, served by public transportation, you know, a sort of lively urban context that things like company startups and high-tech companies could fit into, smaller ones. So, you know, that's a good goal for Chapel Hill to think about. But we need to think, where in town is the best opportunity for that? And I'm convinced that the best opportunity is this really large area that goes from University Mall north to the old Volvo place, and further north too. That area has tremendous potential to be a second downtown that could have mass transit, many kinds of services. It could have a lot of office space and commercial space that could fit new kinds of uses. So, you know, that's one thing we need to keep in mind. So the point I'm making is that I think there's six future focus areas, and each of them has its own distinctive potential. They don't all fit into the same plan. And so as we're planning for MLK as to strive, we need to keep the whole town context in mind. In other words, we don't want to sprinkle little bits of urbanism all over town and not have enough of a critical mass to really do anything. So, you know, it just seems to me that the biggest thing that we need to keep in mind for MLK South and Estes is Carolina North. And it's been puzzling to me how little mention has been made of this up to now, but we have 3 million square feet of approved development there. It's going to be an enormous public investment. It's going to be the future economic engine of the town. It's going to be the biggest thing that's ever happened to Chapel Hill since Research Triangle Park started. You know, Research Triangle Park brought new kinds of residents and new kinds of businesses to Chapel Hill. Carolina North will be even bigger because it's right here in the middle of town. We're not just on the fringe of it. So I think the biggest topic we need to tackle for MLK Estes is how can this area accommodate to and absorb this enormous coming investment in Carolina North, and what would best complement that and make it most beneficial to the town in the future.
And we will have the university at the public information meeting so that they can share the plans for Carolina North and all the commitments that have been made as part of the development agreement.
That's great. I appreciate the chance to take part in this meeting, and my main points would just be, again, that we need this really good quantitative data on what the town needs, and we need to think about it in the town-wide context.
I think that's important, too, because we want to make sure we have a chance to talk in detail for the specific area and get at that character that's appropriate here without losing sight of the fact that downtown's going to have certain things, Ephesus is going to have other things, and we don't have to do the same thing.
Right, one quick question. When you present information, is part of that going to be the traffic impacts of Carolina North? Because obviously traffic is going to be a huge issue in this corridor.
Yeah, and there's a huge menu of improvements scheduled over time.
Well, not just improvements, but actually how much traffic you're talking about, because that will impact, I mean, you can say what Carolina North is expecting to bring in terms of new traffic, what improvements are expected, how much that will carry, and then that will help tell Estes what they can expect.
We have all of that in the Carolina North traffic impact analyses, and I mean, it's all on the web right now, but it's not easily digested.
Yeah, that would be great. If you could figure out an easy way to present that would be a great.
Take a talk.
Well, I think
that's one of the more critical questions is, you know, the traffic impact.
Because if Carolina North is...
A resident understanding that.
Yeah, well, if Carolina North is putting that area near capacity, even with improvements, that obviously will affect what other kind of development or cars or parking can be added to the area, too.
Mary Jane, has the town completed, or are they doing, is probably the first question, traffic study for what was used to be called Carolina Flats, whose new name I don't recall, as part of their request?
Chartwell. Yeah, the way any development over a certain threshold is addressed is that the developer pays the town to hire someone to do the traffic impact analysis.
Okay.
And so, yes, that project has to have one.
But has it been done is the question.
I don't know the answer.
Okay.
I just got back from vacation this morning.
Shame on you. I hope you had a good time. Because, of course, beyond the traffic study that's on the web is all driven by the work that Carolina North did, which, of course, is huge. You know, we refer to it as the elephant in the room, right?
Mm-hmm.
But these other developments that are on the think process, in the even proposal development process, will have impact, as well all this detailing work, right?
Yeah, when a concept plan is submitted, they don't have to have completed that traffic impact analysis, but when they submit their special use permit, they do have to have that.
Yeah, so if they're going to be submitting anytime soon, it's going to have to be contract shortly, right?
And I don't know.
I have no idea why, but those of us who live on Somerset Island did see cables, towering cables across the street months ago.
It could be that the university also does. There are certain times of the year that they have to do all their traffic counts online.
In that context, though, what people are saying, but nobody's traffic study for Carolina North, and they say, well, we're going to generate this, and then Chartwell does something else and somebody else. If they're not adding on top of each other's, it's, you know,
they actually do. Yeah. So anything in that area has to include the Carolina North traffic counts, as far as I understand, but I will confirm. So we know that for sure.
So why don't we talk about implementation of the process some? If that's acceptable?
Yeah.
So I know Julie and Amy were going to talk to this some, Julie.
Yeah, I just wanted to say a few words about one of my favorite small area plans. And this was the one done in completed in 1992, the small area plan for the southern area. And Lee Starro spoke about it at the council meeting, about it being a thoughtful, substantial plan, a really good product, because the town took the time to do it right and did not try to condense the process. So, I mean, the kinds of things that it's got in here are the history of the area today. This is just the table of contents. Goals and objectives, design concepts, projected impacts, and then the plan. I know you know all this. I just which benefit of everyone else. But and then recommended strategies. And what I like about this plan is the actual process that they used. It was very successful in terms of having a group of people. It was clear who was making decisions, who was making recommendations. And then, miracle of miracles, the council actually implemented it. So I don't mean to be too cynical, but this is like one of our concerns, is how all this huge planning exercise is actually going to be turned into something that really means something. So if anybody hasn't seen this plan, it's online. It can be found online. And it has the kind of depth that Gretchen was mentioning when she said, we're not going just to a zoning designation, we're going to all the why and the analysis and that kind of thing to get us there.
Julie, how long did it take to, in a start to finish, in essence?
I think it was a year and a half, if I'm not mistaken, year and a half. And then I wanted to mention the, we put together, just pass it around, some recommendations on how a process might work. And I'm just going to touch on some aspects of it. Basically, the facilitation, which sounds like the town's off and running with that, then some kind of committee which focuses energies and planning that works with the facilitator and town staff. And we put together some suggestions of how that might work. 5 members of adjacent neighborhoods, a planning board member, a transportation board member. And then the first stage of all this is really preparing the plan, which Aaron made that point, that what we would like to see the August community meetings devoted to is actually preparing, in addition to the information. And then we get into the first phase of the of our process, which could be 3 months, for example, September through November, where you clarify the decision making, you agree on the specific objective, you agree what the final product is, that kind of thing. And then the second phase would be January through March, maybe small groups meet more frequently. But again, what this assumes is that the community really has a meaningful role in all this decision making, that it's not just staff-driven, it's community-driven. So I just wanted to ask Amy if she had any comments, because I know the planning board thought a lot about this when they were reviewing the 2020 plan, to see if you have anything to add, Amy.
No, I think what you've laid out here is good. One of the planning board members named John Ager, who must be a software person, I assume, has done a very detailed sort of flow chart of how things happen, and I think it's very complicated, but the one big take home is that it's a real iterative process. As decisions are made at one step, they're taken back to the community for comment and then worked on again, and then so people don't just aren't surveyed and give their opinion, then somebody else decides what to do with that material, that it comes back and people get to work out the details. So I think that's important. And the planning board, we had suggested some changes to 2020, and the implementation phase was one of the parts that was not accepted in the part that actually went to council. So I don't know whether there were a lot of things that were more government specific that you guys know how the process works better than we did, so yours was much better than ours. But it was concerning to us that the kind of community involvement that we're talking about isn't actually enshrined in the plan.
Yeah.
So right now we're kind of all working off a little less than a handshake, and that was concerning to the planning board.
And I think, if I can just say one thing to that, you're right that this level of detail was not in 2020, and I think part of what maybe wasn't articulated in the public hearing is that you have to have a conversation like this and figure out what's right, because what's right here is different than what's right down here in Hillsborough and Ephesus, because they're all kind of different places. It is a handshake, but that's part of why we're here. I mean, we want to do this with all of you. We want to plan it together. We want to make sure that we're true to that involvement that we said we would be. So, this is very helpful, and we're looking for a facilitator, and we're going to have these kinds of conversations and start scoping something out that we can share back and go to the council on, and so forth.
Can I ask a question? I'm a visitor, so I cannot let me go ahead. The term community input has been bandied about an awful lot, but it strikes me that it's rather ambiguous in terms of how you define what community input is and how you determine in the final analysis what the voice really represents. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not going to go to the polls and have a vote, I take it. But is this a consensus-based process? How do you, in past experience, get a sense of what the community voice really is?
We've used a lot of different models in town, but I'd actually be curious to know what people here are looking for, because you can do broad public consensus, which has its strengths and its weaknesses. You can have a decision-making group. I think we struck a reasonable balance recently on the South 15501 vote. It wasn't perfect, but we had a group that worked with a large group of participants and then tried to reflect what the larger group said. The Glenn Lennox project was even, I think, more... it was very much consensus-based. It had a small group that made the recommendations, but there was broad participation during the discussions that informed their recommendations.
Mary Jane, when you say it was consensus-based, whose consensus was it, and how was that decided?
So I was the staff liaison.
Everybody who agrees with me.
I was the staff liaison, so I can speak about that. So for Glenn Lennox, each of the interests in the community were represented by members on the committee. So there were representation from the property owner, Crow Properties. There was representation from apartment tenants, separate representation from the residents who lived in the neighborhood, at-large members, representatives from the Church of the Holy Family, a representative of an existing neighborhood conservation district, because it was a neighborhood conservation district development process. And I might be missing some, so forgive me. Council representation. And so these people people applied to be on the committee, and then the members were appointed by the council. And so the way that they worked is that the representatives on the committee spoke with their constituents is a better word, in from where they lived or from worked, and then they brought their opinions back. Glenn Lennox committee met bi-monthly for 2 years and never once took a vote. And the plan that came out of that, all consensus-based, if I can speak for the community, I would say that they feel that everyone had to make a compromise, the developers, the neighborhood, the apartment tenants, but it came together to be something that they strongly believed in and that really reflected the values of the community. And so I think that sense of something that the community really supports is what we really want to get in this neighborhood with this work that we're doing here. And Glenn Lennox was a little long, all in total 4 years, so that's a little much for some people to commit that time to. But when we say consensus, we look to that process, that they created a strong plan, no votes were taken, they worked it all out through discussion.
Okay.
So Megan, council appointed one representative per interest?
No, there were varying, there was one representative from the church, three from the property owner, three from the neighborhood, three from the apartments, two at large, and then of course the partridge and the pear tree is there too. But
and yeah. Council decided on that.
Who decided, did the constituents agree that this person would be a good representative? Or?
I think they voted, so to be honest, I'm not sure how they decided amongst themselves who, did I say it? They didn't, I'm not sure if they decided amongst themselves who would apply or if whomever was interested applied, and then they were appointed, I can't speak to that.
But taking one step back, Megan, is the question of how you decide the framework of the committee and whether the community is involved in saying, yes, that's fair. So,
yeah, well, the community, I would say that the Glen Lennox community did feel that that was a fair representation.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or they gave up. Some of them gave up. The I was involved in the Glen Lennox, and I think the one piece, critical piece you left out was that that made it a success. I do agree that there was some success there, was that they went, first of all, it started out as a broad community aspect, and actually the process John Agar presented as part of the planning board was actually followed in that all this disparate view at the start was worked on, they brought back, that's why it took 4 years, so they brought it back, and then it got easier and easier as people more and more understood and agreed on the elements of it. But then there was these very important places in the process where it's brought back to the community, like during the charrette process, where there's a validation, and there were some changes after that process. That was that the representatives who'd been working now for probably about 2 years at that point had come up with what they thought was a pretty good best guess. They brought it back to the community, and the community said, you know what, you got these parts right, you got these other parts wrong. And then, by the way, that allowed the greater community. I was involved in Glen Lennox. I don't live anywhere near Glen Lennox. So I just find it interesting that, you know, when you rehearse these in your mind, you think about who is representing the neighborhoods. We forgot the part where we actually brought it back to the wider community and asked for validation.
And we plan on, we would like to incorporate that into these focus area studies
what we're talking about, not losing sight of the whole town and making sure that it doesn't just narrow into a discussion between the people who are willing to stick it out for 2 years or whatever, because if you don't keep opening it back up, you don't catch those people who maybe can't devote a night a week to an ongoing planning process.
Can I ask you something?
And
thank you very much for what you've been doing. I know you have a formidable task, and I think it's been rather clear here today that communication is something that we all need to work on. And when you're talking right now about the process, I think, you know, if we can keep in mind that it's a bottoms-up process, as we've all been reiterating and reiterating here, but we need to have written understanding that we're all on the same page about who's going to make the decision. Where will they come from? All of that has to be done, and you as the planning department, in my opinion, have the expertise to, you know, what if I come in and say I want restaurants and antique shops on MLK? And you work through this process, and you help us understand, and we come to a conclusion about what we can have there. But I think communication and trust, and I think we have to build a community that feels like it's an inclusive thing and that there's no antipathy there, because that's the last thing we want. And we need your help in discovering how to accomplish all the things we want, but I do think we need to really, really, really keep in mind it's a bottoms-up process. We've all got to understand where we're coming from. There's not to be any surprises. We should stay in constant contact with you if we have things to say. And I think that if we can learn to communicate, we'll keep all of us on track. No surprises for anyone. But thank you for all that you're doing. Thank everybody here. because it's a lot of work. And I think we can do it. You know, none of us had to live here, I bet. I've had to live places in times when my husband moved or something. But we chose to live here because it's Chapel Hill and it's a wonderful place to live. And we want to keep it that way with whatever development we need, but we need to keep in mind what Chapel Hill is.
Priscilla, were you going to talk a little bit about some of your thoughts about representation of the committee and what they should do?
And then we can loop back to the mass.
We want to come
because we skipped over that.
Well, yeah. And the other thing we wanted to talk about was agreement on names and terminology and geographic area, at least for our initial discussion, right, before we're with the rest of the community. We're all on the same page.
So which do you want first, maps?
I was going to just continue and come back to that.
I think it actually makes sense to do the maps because the name is related to the map.
That's fine.
Thank you. I, in the midst of our group that has been meeting and talking about this, the issue of defining the area we're talking about, this term Estes Corridor kept coming up, and it was clear to us that obviously more than just the people along the corridor itself would be affected. And so in trying to define an area that might be reasonable for this study, we thought about the area that would be bounded by Homestead on the north, Hillsboro on the south. It would be Sewell to the east, west, and Franklin Street on the east. Now, I took a marker and drew a rough draft map of what that would look like. And I think it incorporates most, and perhaps not all, of the concerned people living in these areas that would be affected by things such as traffic patterns, egress, and out of those neighborhoods and ingress and so forth. So that's just a suggestion. I'm not saying that exactly what it should be, but it'll give you some visual idea of the area that we might be talking about. So I thought reflected what our small group here was.
Well, I need to contribute to that in that when you're defining an area for crosstown communication, you have to go from function aerial function to function. That is, you have to go from Estes Drive to north to where the next crosstown road is, and south to the next crosstown road. And a crosstown road is a road that goes between two spoke roads that go in and out of town. So one of the problems, unfortunately, is that the area between Estes Drive and Weaver Dairy is a very large area. However, you have to consider it because all those people that live in that section, if they're going north, they go up to Weaver Dairy. If they're going south, they go down to Estes. So it's an important functional definition of the area. If you do anything less than that, say if you come to Homestead, where that doesn't go across to the other road, then you have a problem because you don't have a complete functional representation of the area. And since transportation seems to be, at least from my perspective, I guess I'm a transportation person, The infrastructure of transportation is really, really critical to good development. And unfortunately, we don't have enough crosstown connection between Estes and Weaver Dairy, so that is a problem. I don't know how that is going to be solved. But so anyway, if you were going to do this right, the functional area has to go from the crosstown street to the north, to the crosstown street to the south. And between the two spoke roads that you're speaking of, which seem to be more like Martin Luther King and Franklin Street. Now, there was some discussion about going over to Sewell.
you know, maybe because of Carolina North mm-hmm. and that sort of thing, that we should be thinking about, well, is, you know, is that sort of another spoke road?
Yeah, I think this is the kind of conversation we'll have during that, you know, public information meeting, where people will want to talk about these things and where the boundaries should be. Because what's right for transportation may be slightly different than what's right for a really detailed discussion about building height, if you have a lot of area that isn't going to change. You know, single-family residential areas probably don't need a lot of discussion about building height.
But certainly with respect when you're discussing the amount of traffic on Estes Drive and how much, you know, where the parking is located in town, you know, is we want it to be maybe locate a lot of the parking on the gateways to the town, and so people take the bus in on the spoke roads. So this is definitely something that we should be thinking about very carefully, because if we only do halfway, we're not covering the full functional area, where the people go when they drive, and that's important to the structure of the whole neighborhood.
And I think by putting some of these illustrations up and letting people react to them, we'll hear these kinds of ideas about where the right boundaries are for the study and for which topic.
So who will make the final decision on the boundaries in your mind?
I don't know. I mean, I think when we talk about designing the process, it feels like that should be one of the first group's first decisions. But we haven't really talked in detail yet about
it. It also does go to the, I mean, we kept talking about name, but it does go to the naming, and it raises some questions about that, which I don't have a suggestion to put out here, but mm-hmm. it does seem that the term Estes is a little limiting and maybe confusing.
And we may need to change the name at some point. Right now, if we did that, I think it would have caused mass confusion in the world. And so, you know, it was called the Estes Drive area, focus area in the plan. So,
but you could add an OK Estes. I mean, or something like that.
Yeah, something that would indicate its draft would make us a lot happier.
I just wouldn't presume to change the name today because it would cause more confusion.
Which is, I know that, you know, MLK is already a major transportation artery, and I hear that there's a major rapid bus transit study coming up for MLK.
An alternatives analysis. Mm-hmm. An alternatives analysis?
Yeah, and of course that's the main way to get from the campus to Carolina. So it seems at a minimum this area ought to be called MLK South-Estes, or else people will not really understand what it's all about.
It's true you've already announced this meeting under that name, but it may be that would be a good moment to say, okay.
I think if that's a time when we have a process and we have a proposed name and an idea of what a committee might look like, it's helpful to put all that out there together instead of changing little pieces here and there.
But aren't you going to limit the people you get to the meeting on the 28th and 29th if you do relegate it to just that? I would think you'd draw in a lot of neighborhoods more if we had it extended. I don't think it'd be confusing. I mean, we get so much input every day on our computers.
We've already changed it, right, from the Estes Corridor, and earlier it was South MLK, so it's been a moving kind of target. So to add MLK to Estes or to go back to South MLK, I don't actually think it'd be very confusing for many people, Mary Jane. I think that's something you're worried about unnecessarily.
Okay, I am. I mean, given the reaction to just putting the draft, you know, this is the area out there.
And what we're actually reacting to is that it changed from what it originally was. And so it's been a continual thing. So to change it to be more in line with what the rest of us kind of react to, I don't think it would be a problem at all.
Also, if you want to capture...
If you can help us share with others and, you know, let them...
But if you want to capture the folks who live in Shadowwood, Timber Hollow, people who are interested about Carolina North, people who live down to Hillsborough Street, right, in that, I think that's what we're asking you to think about rechanging as quick. To capture those folks. Otherwise, I think you would think that this is Phillips School to to the intersection or something, you know, some very narrow, and that's what I've run into when discussing with my neighbors and other, you know, why am I interested in this? And I'm like, well, this is wide-ranging. It affects Piney Mountain as much as it affects Mount Bolas or Hillsborough Street, Umstead. The name does matter. I'm just strongly suggesting, along with everybody else, just cast a wider net. By the way, face about two-thirds of people at those meetings are going to be the people in these rooms anyway, so... Right, so... But I would love to see people from Timber Hollow, Shadow Wood,
Elk and Hills.
Exactly, my old neighbor, I can't...
Well, while we're reaching out, we need to be... look at our representation, and we're essentially a donut. That is, the people that live right on Estes Drive are not represented here. And I think that that's really important, too, that we somehow reach out to them and get their input as to, especially the long-timers that have lived on Estes Drive. They have a really important perspective to share about how Estes has been used over the years. One of the old-timers who has since moved and since passed on told me that there used to be a bus route that went up and down Estes Drive. I didn't know that. I heard that that Estes Drive didn't go through
it stopped, right.
And there was a lot of concern from the neighbors about when we, you know, having it go through, that they would lose their neighborhood. And they were right, because the people that are on Estes Drive are feeling like there's the whole town is going by in front while they get their mail on the mailbox, you know. So I think that we need to be really sensitive to and what they would see as a solution as well.
So I think that there are a couple more things that we wanted to touch on, and then I think we should come to some understanding, Mary Jane, of kind of what we're going to do together and what kind of deliverable we might have out of the meeting. But Priscilla, we were going to talk a little bit about some thoughts about the representation of the committee and what they might do.
There's some more thoughts that we need to share there.
Yeah, who is, when you say community, the community is going to be both the people who are affected by the decisions as well as the people who are going to be part of the process. Who are they, and exactly what kind of role will they be? The model result points toward a committee, and we've already talked somewhat about how you decide who should be on that committee and who should be on it. It does need to be representative of the communities and the neighborhoods, several neighborhoods. Members from, as liaison from the planning board and the council. And I think we do need a university presence there as well. We keep coming back to what I personally feel is a critical issue, and that's the facilitator. I think there's that really a professional facilitator can really keep the creation, keep people on track, keep the discussion balanced, keep it focused, keep it non-combative if at all possible, and keep it moving. What we're aiming at is a roadmap that would include not only the destination of the roadmap, which is this kind of thing, but also the steps along the way. You said you already have out feelers for that. Hopefully that you're including the community in kind of reviewing the choice for facilitator. I know some members of this group have contacts with people, have come across the facilitators they've thought well of.
We put out a request for qualifications for a facilitator and planning consultant who's used to doing this kind of process and who can facilitate, you know, the discussion.
I see two potentially conflicting roles, mm-hmm. in that somebody who's a professional planning consultant often has their own idea about where, what the roadmap should be and where it should go, and also tends to have had experience that tends to be heavily weighted more in favor of developers and so on and so forth, whereas a facilitator has no dog in the fight. Is just there to help us massage through the process. And we'll listen, among other things, to what you and we would be saying, what we want to do, what we want to end up with, what kind of deliverable. So I think that's one of the things that we're concerned about. I mean, people have had experiences in other contexts with coordinators who essentially ran with the process. And as opposed to facilitators, I mean, it's the difference between a marriage counselor and an arbiter judge. And I think what we want is somebody to really guide the process in an uninvested way.
In the case of Planalytics, what happened? Was there a facilitator brought in then kind of halfway?
There was for the charrette, but there was not for the committee discussions. And then there was a consultant who helped craft the zoning, the code, but they were not a facilitator.
But there was a neutral facilitator for some section of it.
A facilitator. The Dispute Settlement Center held a workshop early, like in 2009, but there was not a facilitator for the committee meetings.
Mary Jane, where do the RFQs go out to? Towns in North Carolina, people in North Carolina, all over the place.
Yes, they're posted.
Small towns, large towns.
They're posted all over the place, nationally and
so how many did you send out?
Well, we announce it.
You just send out one and then send them back. So everybody got them and then...
Yeah.
So how many normally respond and then who vets them?
You hope to get at least three. We got more than that. And then we have looked at them. We just got them. We got a good selection. I can't really talk about it in detail right now.
Right.
In case anyone in the room is affiliated.
Right.
But we have to go through all the North Carolina laws for how you can.
Could there be a selection committee criteria?
Yes.
And is staff the only people on the selection committee?
Just staff.
Is there a reason why the community can't be part of that?
I don't know. I would have to ask that question. So I will ask.
And even as a non-voting member, if that's depending on how you do your procurement process.
That's a good suggestion that we would involve the community member or a neighborhood person as a non-voting member, just to get some feedback.
There's certainly different philosophies to facilitation, and I think that this was more of a consensus kind of approach, which is a very good approach in that it leaves time for education of the public and a full discussion of what it means to have, you know, is this is more sustainable than, or, you know, this has consequences, and people need to learn a lot.
Yes, that's true.
So I think certainly philosophy and having some feedback from the group as to whether we think this person has the right kind of philosophy to facilitate the group.
Well, and one question I would have, I was thinking about this when you were talking earlier about the steering committee, is if that is a group that's chosen by the community to lead this process and to represent the community, you really want to make sure you have a group there that is trusted by everybody and feels balanced and agreed upon. Because I think usually that's the most important piece, as we've experienced in some of our processes. And I saw that you have a kind of description of who might be on that group in this handout. I noticed that there's nobody who's sort of bike and ped or greenways focused.
Well, maybe that's because we're, you know,
and include everything.
I mean, we're again stuck with that awful semantic issue of, are we planning the plan or planning the process for the plan, or, you know, where are we in this? And
I'm just curious if that's an interest.
actually, I think it is an interest, but what happened was, and I apologize for this, that I actually gave out an earlier draft today. I sent the correct one with the letter to Roger, but somebody pointed out, it was Fred Lamp, actually, who pointed out to us that he didn't think that a steering committee that was larger than 8 could function well. Mm-hmm. And so, as a result, we changed. We just had one planning board member, and we didn't have any of the others, but we thought it was important to have the school board and the UNC, so that's why we made that decision, and I apologize that I didn't get you the right draft.
But I don't think we can decide today what the slots and how many slots.
No, and I'm just interested in issues and interests are in terms of the committee and what their role would be, because I see down below that it's not really about that steering committee, it's subcommittees plus a steering committee. So I'm just curious what you're thinking of.
Just one comment before we get into that is that it sounds like the Glenn Lennox process, that the members of the different groups who were going to represent them were actually chosen by the groups themselves.
I'm not sure about that, no.
Or if it was just...
We don't know, and I don't know.
Because I think that would be ideal, especially for the neighborhood groups. If you could get, say, you know, they could get together and say, yes, we'd like to nominate X, Y, and Z to do this. One of the problems I have with the South 15 Title I process, and to a certain extent with the leadership on 2020, it was all very top-down. It was chosen by council without a lot of consultation with anybody, and I think this process would work better if
actually,
the groups can select.
Chosen by council, I don't think.
The South 15501 was not. No, it was by 2020 leadership, I think, chose those people.
My recollection of Glenn Lennox was that they asked for people, and people applied for slots.
Yeah.
And not, so there wasn't that process. But, the key thing here is that whatever this group is, steering committee, however you want to look at it, that they get to pick the process they want to use, the tools they want to use, and they get to review the people that will be assisting them in terms of what Priscilla and them said in terms of picking a facilitator they can work with. Because I've had good experiences with, town-appointed facilitators, not so good experiences also. And, it's allowing the group to pick the tools that they use to pursue a goal, I think, is just the key role. That literally is the key role.
An answer to your question, Mary Jane, about this, which does kind of mix in the idea of the steering committee with subcommittees, I think building on Sarah's thought that this is, for the process to be really good, you need to take the time it takes, and education is a big part of it, and just to have the 8-member steering committee sort of making all the decisions, it'd be far better to have the community involved and a lot of study groups in addition, so... some way of melding those and answering
questions. I think
question.
It's going to be essential for this to be a very open process. So it can't just be a dozen people doing everything. It's going to have to be like what we're trying with the 15501, where anybody who shows up gets to participate. But then this group has a responsibility for reflecting that input.
But they didn't then go back to the community at large with that input. They made recommendations.
Right.
I mean, there people were allowed. Yeah, people were allowed to attend meetings and comment, and they then
but their commentary was not included either verbatim or even in summary.
Actually, it was, but I think that Amy's point is that we have time here to do a lot more of that iterative, coming back to the group, double check, validate. And
that's really important. Yeah.
And could I just anticipate somebody somewhere, and it could be somebody pivotal, being concerned about the time. And saying, well, we don't have 4 years to do this. We have, whatever. And I'm optimistic that it can be done in a shorter period of time because we do have the benefit of Glenn Lennox in the southern area. And even in 2020, we've seen the mistakes that were made in some of these, but we've also, they kind of slogged their way through and found out, for example, going back to the general community actually works. And so if it's built in, instead of having to trip over that as, oh, gee, this works, we already know it works. So I think it will be easier to plan in a way that's efficient, and it doesn't need to take 4 years. May not need to take 2.
Well, John Agar's proposed process is actually very good. It's used in my industry a lot. It's basically you spend the most time up front getting people on board and getting a kind of the train going, mm-hmm. And then you find that as you go back and iterate, you're always iterating, right? But as you go further into the process, iterating each time, it gets easier and easier, faster and faster, because there's a lot of built-in assumptions and trust, et cetera, that you've already developed, right? Instead of back end, which is kind of what happened with Chapel Hill 2020 a little and some other things, is that we kept going like this. Mm-hmm. We weren't refining down. We were expanding out, right?
In some ways, I think we'll benefit from having a more focused discussion here.
So I'd like to give Alan a little bit of time to talk about UNC's participation.
Yep.
And are some thoughts about that process?
I'll make it real brief. It strikes me after this discussion, the issue is not whether to involve UNC, but how to involve them. I think that's broad consensus, so I'm not going to trot over any of that ground. It strikes me that I want to present more problems than solutions. There are a couple reasons why it is hard to figure out how to involve UNC, and specifically Carolina North. The first one that strikes me is that Carolina North has been a moving target. I was teaching at the university when it was first discussed, and there was a lot of talk about how we were going to have a major undergraduate campus that was going to develop out where the land is. Among other things, none of the faculty particularly wanted to go out there teaching undergraduates, and I think the university decided they couldn't move the undergrads up and down MLK during the day in a very efficient way, and they gave up on the undergraduate focus. And as you all know, it's got a graduate, professional, and research focus now. So there's been a major change. It took several years to do this. The other thing that makes it kind of a moving target in recent years is that everything done there is dependent on funding. And this has to really be seen in the context of the crisis of funding for the university and many other public institutions in this state. So there was, you know, by this point, we were going to have 3-4 buildings up there.
At least.
If not more. Then, of course, they ran up against the town, and the town wanted a major role in what was going to happen, because the university originally was just going to plan the damn thing and institute it. So what I'm saying is that it's been a long, slow process. And due to the funding issues, it's going to be very difficult to figure out not so much that there will be an impact, but when it will occur. And this is very important for our immediate area, because there are other developments being proposed that would affect us immediately. So we may be left in the long run with some of the current developments occurring, then with Carolina North stacked on top 10, 15 years down the road. I don't honestly know how to deal with that, but I think that has to be attended to, and that's a really important issue. And I'd say one other thing about another way I think it's hard to figure out how to involve them. My experience with Carolina North is that when they come and talk with you, or when you go talk with them, they primarily focus on developments inside Carolina North. They talk about the landfill and the problems with that. They talk about the duct bank, or they talk about which building is going to come first, or we're trying to get funding for the law school, but we don't have it. You know, these are all very important things, but for our area plan, the issue is how that development affects the surrounding area. Now, several of you touched upon traffic, which is an obvious connection, but I think there are others, too. There's the possibility of faculty housing, the whole question of whether the surrounding area is going to provide some kind of housing for graduate students. I think within the first 800,000 square feet, there are to be a couple hundred thousand square feet of housing.
Yeah, 25% eventually.
25%. But they're probably going to put that off. You know, there are a lot of really complications here. So as you think about how to involve Carolina North, I think you have to realize it's not going to be straightforward.
Well, Mary Jane, there's actually two other things about Carolina North. There's things on Carolina North that we would be nice to get some the university to tell us more concrete information. So there was a commitment to build some retail and some other kinds of support infrastructure, and that's always been somewhat vague. considering that, and this ties into the second issue, which is irrespective of what's going on in Carolina North, we are already seeing a cascade of developments right along, right, with the preserve and everything else around the what we call the apron, right? So irrespective of what's going on in Carolina North, there's this development. And then we're being asked, well, we need more kind of retail, or so, you know, developers saying we need this kind of retail, that kind of retail. It'd be nice to know if the kind of retail they're proposing privately, directly adjacent Carolina North, is something that the university was planning to do, right? So we don't double up, right?
Which kind of gets it, who, you know, people call the university the 800-pound gorilla. I've decided it's 108-pound gorillas everywhere. Because there's no one university.
That's right.
But, so part of what I'm thinking about is having one university representative is good for a committee, but there's more than one person from the university who needs to be in those discussions.
We're seeing the same problem. The new property that UNC Healthcare just purchased on 15501, they've committed to provide retail support services there for their staff. But when you ask them, well, what does that mean? Is it restaurants? Is it laundromat? What is it? And they're like, it's something, you know.
Because they don't know yet.
They don't know yet. So the but it would be nice to know if, you know, is it restaurants at Carolina North? Is it laundromats? Is it grocery stores? Is it how much? What kind of, is it going to be something the community can use? Is it something just for the targeted, you know?
Somehow we're going to have to find a way to have that conversation and when there are unknowns to acknowledge them. Because I think what you're saying is really true. You know, the funding situation that they have means that there are things they just don't know.
Is the university's work on Carolina North come to a halt for the time being, so that they're rid of much activity?
No, there's going to be one building, and it is a science research building that is what the university calls self-funded, which means they're taking units scattered all over town and going to put them there, and in part the support's going to come from the rent they don't have to pay. I don't think I can't imagine that all adding up very well, but that's the plan. The law school is a high priority, but there's no funding for it. And of course, Horace Williams Airport has to close before anything of this can occur, and that's apparently again been delayed. I think that happened last time I was out of town.
The growth of the university itself in terms of its undergraduate population has a big impact on the need for housing.
Yes.
And that's one of the components, isn't it, of one of these development proposals that's closer to the intersection?
Right.
Yes. And
actually,
of course,
I hope everyone knows that August 15th at noon downstairs, we're going to have a presentation by the university's assistant vice chair, Winston Chris, for student housing to talk about students on campus and off campus and what they know about growth.
That's very important.
Yeah.
Is that going to be predominantly a discussion of undergraduate housing?
Well,
I've never known them to talk much about graduate housing.
You don't care.
Let me ask, you know, they focus on the undergrads, but they do administer the graduate housing and the student family housing on campus. So I can ask.
Yeah. I think it's especially important for this group for us to hear something about graduate housing.
I'll pass that on. I can't make any promises.
And again, that data always has to include current vacancy, things under consideration already, as well as projected need for the future. We tend to get only projected need for the future, and without fitting in the other pieces, that just as it is with the issue of other kinds of developments.
And another thing to remember with the student housing is now we're actually a magnet pulling students off campus. There are empty undergraduate beds on campus.
Yeah. 400 plus.
Because we're making more desirable housing for them. So that's another thing that we have to
do. Cheaper live off campus.
It's cheaper.
More parking.
Yeah, so.
Mary Jane, if you're going to talk to the university before the 28th meeting, you might want to also ask them about you know, the Innovation Center actually went through the whole approval process, and there has always been some squishiness around the university's response if they feel like they could just resurrect that project as it was approved, and move forward or not, because that's another 80,000 plus, and that is outside the Carolina North. Well, you know, well, Mary Jane, by the way, if you guys don't know, was the spearhead, one of the spearheads of the Carolina North for the university. So
who is the spokesman now? I mean, taking Jack Evans' place, if there is one.
Oh, I can't.
Bruce
went to
Rundberg
that.
Is remember the best, those I think.
Bruce Rundberg is facility. And,
is she the one who gave the...
Yes. He's newer, and he's kind of stepped into the...
stepped into
well, let's take our time. So, Mary Jane, why don't we spend the last few minutes of the meeting that we have? We only have a few more minutes to outline some deliverables that you and we as a team might do from this meeting. Some suggestions that we have are, draft a description of where we're headed, start the work on the planning process document that maybe we could have ready by the end of the month for the meeting. I think we've talked about professional facilitation as a goal for a successful product. I think we've all kind of nodded our heads. But some of the process around selection of that person obviously would be part of that, I think. Right? The roadmap for community discussion and how neighborhoods might play a role in the key decision making. So how should we do that together? What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it looks like you have begun that here.
Yeah.
What's the best way for us as a group to work on something like this collaboratively?
I'll send you some thoughts on how we can an online approach so we can make, I'll send you some ideas on that. But we'll do that quickly.
Yeah.
And I have access to a website that we could host it on temporarily and then we could do it.
Because this feels to me like something where we need a way, we can't be emailing workers around.
Yeah, I hate that.
I have a file.
Yeah.
So if there's a way to put this out for everyone.
So one of my deliverables from today will be to talk to you further about this. But and since I'm talking about deliverables, I hope you could send us some kind of email or letter telling, and Megan too, to tell us what you think we said today to make sure that we actually are on the same page. Because, a couple times during our discussion today, there's been, I think, some disconnects in how we talk about something versus how you guys are talking about it. I'd just like to make sure that we start off understanding what you think we said, if you don't mind.
So, well, let's do that sort of right now, summarize what we think we did. So, what I would like to do is get some feedback from Will about how we can start with this discussion and develop a proposal for a process together that can then be shared with other stakeholders, probably some council members, town staff, for additional reactions. And then check back with all of you and see if we can come to some agreement on a process that we'd like to recommend.
For August 27th.
That we could share more.
Right. 28th
and 29th.
Yeah, 28th and 29th.
That we could share more widely at that meeting. So that's our initial goal, and we'll see how well we do with that. One of our hopes was to select a facilitator who could be at that open house and get all of this information from the very beginning. So I heard you express an interest in having the community help select that facilitator. I'm worried in the back of my mind that that means we'll miss that opportunity to have someone on the ground running. So one of the things I would like to ask our purchasing folks is what our flexibility is. If we make a selection, can we begin a process? And if the group doesn't agree or doesn't like it, can we reject that facilitator? I don't know what the...
Like a trial sermon, right?
Exactly.
Mary Jane, I'm going to interject for a second.
Yeah.
My hunch is they will say you can't do that as someone who works in government as well. And maybe they will. Maybe they have different rules in the town of Chapel Hill.
They are different than the state.
Than the state or Orange County. But I think that
sort of the step before would be, is there an opportunity to review the final three or final five to see if the ex officio community member or representative, not 25 people stopping or delaying the process, but a person who, if appropriate, may give input of, you know, I feel like this person may best fit our
needs. Let me just ask this question. Who is interested in this room?
Who is interested in what?
Facilitating.
Well,
in helping as the
evaluating. How many people are?
I would be happy to participate on that, but I got to say, I think it's wildly premature to pick that person at this point. The initial meeting is an information-only meeting, so it should not be really contentious because there's not any proposals.
Yeah, they're just there to.
But we're advocating, though. We consider a process. If
3 weeks. That's 3 weeks away. Yeah. That's
all right. Here's another idea to throw out. That is, because it really, even if you got exactly who you wanted and everybody was happy with them, the fact of whether they'd be ready to go on the 28th is maybe a question. So what about getting someone like from the Andy Sachs or somebody like that from the dispute?
We don't really need a facilitator for the 28th, 29th, because it's an informational meeting.
But actually, that isn't entirely our intent for that meeting. Well, I think maybe we're clear enough.
Well, we've heard two different
things. Yeah, exactly.
We've heard it's information only, and then we've also heard if the proposal is ready, then it can also be a feedback.
True.
So is it information only, or is it if we're all ready, then it's information and feedback? Because I think that's a key distinction.
The latter. If the information is ready, it could be information and feedback. That came out of this meeting.
And then we might need a facilitator for that. That was
Would it make any sense? Again, I don't have the same professional knowledge of the process, but I understand that the contracts and the screening and so on is probably subject to some rules for the money people. But would it make any sense to have presence at that meeting for your finalists, your, say, three finalists, be part of the screening process? Just see how they respond to the situation? Is that completely unrealistic? Would it be asking too much of the applicant? Is that a bad idea?
In front of each other.
The town tends to pick facilitators from a small pool of people that they picked before. That seems to be, or consultancies. So I bet Irvin Kala, the people from Raleigh and some other people that we know already will be involved in this, right?
Some familiar people and some new people.
I don't see why you need a facilitator there. If you're just trying to get feedback, this shouldn't be contentious. I mean, this is what I think, you know, or whatever.
You mean at the meeting?
Yeah. I don't see that as a decision-making sort of process, which where you need a facilitator.
And what I professionally am thinking about is that if you really want a good process, it helps to have people tuned in from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And so if we have ideas about the process and we have a consultant lined up who can listen to the feedback on the process, you know, that's just beneficial to everybody. And part of their job is to work with the committee to design the process.
That's right.
The committee doesn't want, I don't think, to design the process in alone, because then they don't benefit from the professional experience. I mean, that's part of why we heard people asking for consultants during the public hearing. And they said, bring somebody in who knows how to do these things, because we don't. So you want that meeting of minds, you know, the people who know what's happening locally.
So then it sounds to me that if anyone other than the staff is going to have any, and there is going to be this facilitator at the meeting, and it's going to be someone hired by the town, then sometime between in the next week or two, someone from or two from the community has to be involved in the selection, if there's going to be any community involved at all.
Yeah, I think that's realistic to keep things going.
So the next question is, if that's acceptable, and I understand the purchasing question,
yeah,
certainly something can be worked, it usually can be,
yeah.
Who would those people be? Who's prepared to do that? Who is
knowledgeable
to do that? I know I won't be here for the next 2 weeks, so I can't volunteer.
And it will be a very small pool of people.
Yes. Priscilla, are you available?
Plus minus, I feel kind of out of my depth with this. I have no experience with what makes a good facilitator and so on. I mean, I wouldn't feel at all competent to do it alone if I had, I mean, Will's got some depth of experience with that.
But maybe as a community member, that's a better, fresher perspective because you're representing.
Or, like, I hate to nominate you, Amy, but Amy would be a great great person because you have seen a lot of facilitated discussions and participated in them, which is similar to my own experience, too.
Yeah, I hate to say this, but Amy is a member of the planning board.
Yeah.
So it's maybe easier to justify inclusion.
Well, I'm thinking that...
Is it conflict?
I'm not sure.
I guess if you're representing the community at large,
right.
I don't know enough about how the RFQ was written and where the planning board role may conflict with the selection versus staff. This is
I think actually as we're having this conversation, whether it's Amy or someone else from the planning board, that feels more in keeping with how the town has functioned in the past because the planning board is supposed to represent the community in community-wide processes. And this is not a criticism of anyone in the room, but it would be easy for somebody who's not here to say, well, you don't represent me, why did you get to do this and I didn't? So, you know, thinking about that perspective, there's a little more legitimacy in that.
No, I'm in trouble.
What I can do is we are meeting tonight, the planning board, and I can ask, talk to the planning board and see if there's anybody who would want to do that. And
I would want to check downstairs.
Okay.
Just make sure that we're kosher.
And if a community member could be involved, would you be interested, Erin? I'm just asking because we're going to be out of town.
I don't think I'm going to be.
This is a real bad time for a lot of us.
Yeah, I'm real booked. I am really booked.
Which goes back to, you know, some of the reason you got the kind of response you got is that it all seemed to happen so fast. And for some of us, it happened. I mean, I was out of town for most of May and June, and there was a lot that happened there that I was, you know, I had to depend on a lot of emails to kind of catch up.
You were cut
so.
Just to clarify, is the RFQ to facilitate this small group or this one plus the other six?
We left it open.
Oh, I
said it's qualifications.
Yeah.
So are we in agreement, at least with the team here, that we think a member from the planning board would be a good addition to the evaluation?
The people want Amy.
They have spoken.
I'm just referring it up the chain of command.
Okay, so you started Mary Jane saying that start with the discussion. So we're getting a facilitator. We'll ask that you put in writing some thoughts of what we're saying together. You started talking about the facilitator.
So we'll do this together. Will's going to share some thoughts.
Right.
We're going to check on making sure we're okay. Amy's going to.
I'll just bring it up with the planning board and say this is what's being proposed.
And then we as a group are going to agree that it's in form to be presented?
I think that's a good idea. That works, and the other thing we can do is we can post draft information on the web. There is a page now for Estes Draft Study, so we can post it so anybody who's not here or not included in the meeting will have a chance to look at it too, just to make it binding.
Is there any way that with the current, because there is a web page up now, and it still connotes certain decisions have been made, is there any way you could add a caveat to that page? Because it's up and anybody can go and continue to get the...
Which decisions does it...
I'm sorry, that if you look at it sounds like we know what we're going to call it, we know where it's going to be, all those things. And is there any way you can caveat that? Just add something saying your ideas, we're open to your ideas, we want to get your input, we're looking to see you on August 28th to get that input. Something that just shows that this isn't in cement.
Or put more than one options up there so yeah. that you see that, yes, they haven't decided yet. There's some options here.
I feel that the biggest gap that we've had in this discussion is a pretty simple one. That's what you call this thing. And I think a lot of people have made really strong points that if you call it the Estes Drive study, people, a lot of people who would want to be involved in it are not going to know what it's about. And so, Gretchen, you made the good point that this thing has been called several things in the recent past. So I think it would be a great step on the part of the town to start calling it MLK South-Estes. Just for truth and labeling.
Or Estes-MLK South.
There you go.
Well, and the kind of
the area is right next to Carolina North. So it's north, south.
With the MLK Estes bullseye.
Yeah.
And the other way to do it is to include that sort of general description and a picture. But then, no matter what we do, someone will feel like it's just fine.
Was there anything, I know you were out of time, Mary Jane, but you had mentioned the letter. Was there something about the letter that you felt wasn't accurate, so we get a little feedback?
Yeah, I feel like when we sit down and we have a conversation, it's always productive. And I want the tone of our communications to reflect that whenever possible. And if we are not doing a good job of that, I want to hear that. I want to make sure that we're being respectful, that we're not being suspicious and assuming the worst of each other at any point. And that there was just something about the tone of that letter that rubbed me the wrong way. It felt, and part of it is because I felt that it brought up many things that we have given you very honest and direct responses to, and I'm feeling like we're not being heard. So when we say we're committed to developing a process with you and we've set up a meeting to do that and we've talked about the agenda and we've said these are the things we want to talk about, 3 days ahead of the meeting to get a letter that says you are not listening to us about any of this, felt like, that our intent had been ignored.
And hard too, because we try to be really responsive when you have questions. We try to email as soon as possible. And so it's hard, and I feel disrespected when we're told that we don't respond quick enough, when really we are trying the best we can. And so to me, that was hard for me to hear.
Have you heard us in terms of why we were concerned about the messages, the way they came out, and why we thought that things were going really way, had left ahead of where we thought that they would be? Do you understand that?
And what I don't understand is why, if you didn't just pick up the phone and ask, or why we had pretty much that conversation right before I went out.
I thought we were all on the same page at that point, but then you see when the materials came out.
And we told you that they were coming and that it was an information meeting. And so if there seemed to be a disconnect in there, it might have been more productive to pick up the phone and call and just say, here's what I thought, did something change? And then to have a chance to talk through it, instead of just assuming that we had gone off and done something else and that therefore it needed to be this letter in writing. But because what happens is then we end up focusing on this negative stuff and trying to address it instead of spending the time on the good stuff.
Well, we were trying really hard for clarity. And so, we're a group and not just one person, there are many. And we were trying to clearly say, okay, what really happened at that meeting? We were sitting there, we heard this, here's what we heard. Mm-hmm. And so this is what we expected. So we were trying to be just as clear as we could. Mm-hmm. And I think it was helpful for our group to actually go through the exercise of writing. And I'm sorry that you felt as you did. But it was really helpful for us to get clarity. And we thought it was logical for the manager, because he's the guy that runs the town, to hear that.
May I say something about communication?
Yeah.
Have to consider this as though we're a diplomatic exchange. Language means everything. The tone of language means everything in terms of how it's received. So I would suggest that that telephone calls, before writing, putting it on paper, which sets it in concrete, is a darn good idea.
And that goes both ways.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I
absolutely
agree.
Resist putting things down on paper too quickly, because then it does get set. And then you have to try to climb over it again, like you're doing now.
Well, maybe, but there's just something as simple as, is this the plan, or is this the plan to make the plan? There was confusion on that.
But I felt like you never called and asked us that. I mean, we could have clearly said, this, well, we are.
But it was already sent out, so it was done.
It was just okay.
Well, I don't want to make a bigger deal of it than it deserves. But I think that if I have one thing in this process, it's that people feel comfortable talking to each other, that people will pick up the phone and ask a question, and that when we need to write something down so that everyone has the same thing and it can be distributed, let's do that together,
that
so that
great.
We don't run into these kind of grinding.
I think that would be extraordinarily helpful.
Well, I just say, personally, I feel badly or bad, depending on how your grammar is.
either way,
if you felt disrespected, I think there is something getting to know us, and we as a group are getting to know each other. It's early in the process, and a lot of us are coming off other experiences and other grounds where we've maybe been worried about this or worried about that. Plus, I think some of what's going on is an artifact again. And this happened quickly and over the summer. Mm-hmm. And so picking up the phone, people are away, or I'm away, and then I come back and find stuff, and it's too late, you know. So don't take some of it too seriously, in the sense that some of this is probably was going to happen at the early stages as we're making, you know, establishing trust, establishing communication, understanding why, for example, if we see something, an invitation to the public that refers to something and it sounds very different, you know, these are our houses. We're not professional developers, but we're professional residents and citizens and taxpayers and so on. And for some of us, it's our enjoyment of the house as well as how we love Chapel Hill. I think everybody here, one way or another, loves Chapel Hill. And so we're partly in protective mode. And as we get into the process and feel confident with it and have learned, you know, thank you for telling us that you were upset. And, you know, it seems to me you showed us that we were had a level of worrying about all that. But I think it's really
and I know Will, things like this always come. Does start somewhere. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into a group at some point. Mm-hmm. But there'll be moments along the way where you think you've heard something that doesn't sound right, or we've said something the wrong way. So whenever we can help each other, because it's not just us, it's also going to be everybody else who mm-hmm. comes to these meetings and reads the newspaper, you know, never shows up at anything or whatever. So.
Fair enough.
Lots of
communications. Well, thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing. And we really appreciate you taking all this time. I think it's been really productive.
Well, I appreciate it. We'll figure out how to get everyone online.